Okay, folks, we got a really full agenda tonight, so we'll go ahead and get started. I'm going to mute all. I'll remind everybody, you do have the ability to unmute yourself. Please feel free to do so if you have a comment or question, or remute yourself afterwards. Later on this evening, the contents of the deck that is being presented in PDF format, as well as the audio track and the contents of the chat window, will go up on our website. We hopefully will have some time at for the last 10. So if you have any questions, by all means, post them into the chat window or wait until after the deck is presented, and you can unmute yourself at that point and ask any questions or make any comments. And with that, I'll turn it over to Alan to lead us through tonight's deck. Alan, take it away.
Okay, thanks very much. And we're going to start off with a follow-up, a brief follow-up from last week. We were talking about secure erasing hard drives using this program called HD Shredder. And somebody asked if the advanced options gave you opportunities to use different settings to do more secure erasing, like more passes on the erase phase. And neither Chris nor I knew, but I looked it up later, and turns out HD Shredder these days has a whole bunch of editions. And the one that's free only has one means of secure erase. If you look at the features here, you notice that it has a secure high-speed deletion, but it doesn't have other mechanisms. So if you want to do more intensive secure erase, then you have to start paying for the software, essentially. But as we said last week, we think that one pass secure erase is plenty good enough for almost every application. So the free edition should work just fine. Okay, second thing, Chris has a share on Sierra.
Yeah, Sarah put out a trend in internet use and attitudes report. I found it rather fascinating. It's a big deck, but it's fairly easy to get through. They say in it that their mission is to promote a trusted internet, and so what they're really trying to figure out is how trusted is the internet for Canadians. And this is the key findings in the report. They report them as the key findings. I found other things more fascinating, some of these, but 16% have used generative AI tool in the past year. I don't know if I really consider that to be sounding low or high or what. 76% thought that sharing deepfakes shouldn't be allowed on social media, which makes me wonder about the other 24% who think that it is a lot, it should be allowed on social media. I'd be wary of those people. They had an interesting thing about people consuming news online and news media sites, and Google searches or searches through search engines were about evenly split, which was kind of interesting. 51% thought that they were confident in the ability to detect fraud and scams online. I seriously question whether the 51% would actually be successful, but that was down. So more and more people are finding that their ability to detect frauds online may be not as great. And then 53% say website makes business look more credible. Again, I sort of wonder about that other 47% who don't think it makes them look more credible. But at any rate, the link is there. And, deepfake is where you come across something that should not be detectable as being a fake thing. So fake photos, but they're realistic enough that people will fall for them. That's really what they're talking about with deepfakes.
I just wanted to throw in a comment. I'll wait till you finish.
Okay. I just have one more slide on this one here. So Alan, next slide. These were the things that I found kind of interesting. Almost one in five spend 9 or more hours per day online. Pretty heavy usage. Top activities, not really surprising, email, social media, and banking. Interesting, I thought 76% were actually satisfied with the internet speed, and half of the people out there have unlimited data, which sort of is heartening, I guess, that people can use unlimited usage of the internet. Only a third thought that their internet and cell phone costs were affordable, and a quarter of the people are cutting back dining so that they can afford their internet access and their mobile use. And a fifth change internet or mobile plan to save money. That I'm surprised that's not even higher. More people actually prefer in-person to online shopping, which I thought was kind of interesting. There were lots of stats how people are actually using generative AI, and you know, they, in terms of their trustworthiness of AI, generative AI, 17% are excited about it, 30% don't trust it, and then 9% liked or shared misleading or untrue content. They didn't say they liked or shared something they knew to be misleading or untrue, and there was a follow-up with that on the number of people that actually then went back when they found out that it was misleading or untrue, actually deleted it or not. So those were the numbers there. Linda, you had a comment?
Yeah, just in general, when you're reporting survey information, don't make that assumption you can subtract. So if it says 74% think it shouldn't be on social media, it doesn't mean 26% think it should. It could be 74% think it shouldn't, 15% think it should not, and 10% didn't answer it. So if they report in the StatsCan standard, you have to include the percent that didn't answer the question.
Yeah, they do have all of the numbers there for the people who said, you know, they either had no opinion or, you know, thought the opposite or whatever. So, yeah.
Right, so you have to make sure it's not just, you can't just do the subtraction off 100%.
Yeah, okay.
The other question there, Chris, was whether this was Sierra users or based on some kind of survey.
It was Sierra that actually did the survey. I'm not sure the exact methodology that they used. It probably is in the document. I just glanced through the document. I didn't go into great detail in terms of looking at all of the details. But anybody's interested, the URL is in the chat. Take a look at the report. I found it kind of interesting.
Okay, and the next item is yours too, Chris. Dave's Garage.
Yeah, so let me just paste in the link for this one. So we've had information from Dave's Garage before. He used to be a operating system programmer from Microsoft. He actually hails from Saskatchewan. And he has this one thing they put out, which was five things anyone can do to speed up their computer. And I found it kind of interesting. A lot of things that I've talked about before. Unused software bloat for sure, uninstalling any software that you don't actually use, making sure your software is kept up to date, because generally speaking, any software updates tend to make things better. Going into your startup apps and services to make sure that you stop any of those that you don't need running all the time. System cleaning and hygiene, a lot of it, but removing junk files on your system and things like that. And then system file repair, which I actually don't typically recommend that people actually do, but might add. So it's good, good YouTube video. Anybody who finds that their computer is running a little bit slow, Dave is a very knowledgeable guy, and he's an entertaining speaker as well.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Chris. Okay. So next up, we have an item from our fearless newsletter editor and webmaster, Bridget Lord.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I finally got it right. Okay, so a couple of weeks ago on the news, there was some talk about the latest SimSwap scam. Now, this isn't new. This scam is several years old, but it's had an uptick recently, and it's been in the news. And SimSwap scam is when somebody can steal your phone number and put it on another SIM card on their phone, or on a new phone, and basically steal all your phone calls, your text messages, and some other whatever else is on that SIM card. Now, I do have some definitions on my last slide, links to Wikipedia for those that want more in detail definitions. And what had me worried about this is that my bank, TD Bank, uses text messaging to send me a code for two-factor authentication. And two-factor authentication is when you need more than just your username or password to log into a site such as your bank account. And this is important because you want as many layers of security between you, between your computer and your bank account. And you want the two-factor authentication is also called multi-factor authentication. And it can be sent by text or it can be sent with an authenticator app. And this is what I'm going to be talking about. TD has just come out. I don't know when exactly they came out with this, but they came out with an authenticate app that generates a code. So now I do talk about some kind of SIM blocking. I tried doing this over the chat on the website, on my Kudu website, and they sent it further up and they never got back to me. So at this point, I just gave up. But there is a way to do it on your phone, and you just have to Google it with your phone model number, and it will tell you how to lock your SIM with a PIN. Now the TD Authenticator app is for a smartphone or a tablet. It's not for a PC. Now that's just the authenticator app. You can still log in using your PC, your desktop, your laptop. You can still log into your bank account like you've always done it. What the authenticator app does is it will generate a code for you to enter on the screen on your PC or on your even on your cell phone or your tablet. And you can, this is a six-digit, one-time use six-digit code that you can enter in order to access your bank account. So you can download this app from the Google Play or the Apple Store. Now,
I think we lost Bridget.
I see her video.
We can't hear you, Bridget. Somehow your microphone is off.
Are we getting connecting to audio?
Okay. Are we good?
There you go. Yep.
Yep.
All right. Sorry, I hit my keyboard. Next slide. Now, while setting up the app, you will need to link to your bank account from within the TD Authenticate app. So this is a one-time thing. You link your app, the TD Authenticate app, to your bank account. And it will ask you, I think it will ask you for a PIN. And you also have the option to use your fingerprint to generate the codes. So this is what I set up. I set up my fingerprint to use to generate the codes. After linking the app to your bank account, you can test the app. Now, I give you all kinds of instructions. The app, the TD Authenticate app, will walk you through it. And once you're linked, once you go through it to the end, you're linked to your bank account, and you can go to your computer, your laptop, your desktop, even your smartphone, your tablet, log into your bank account as you normally would to make sure that the app works. So when you go to log into your bank account, it will ask you for your username and password. And then the next step, it will give you the option to use the TD Authenticator app to generate a code. And this is where you go to your phone and you open the TD Authenticator app and you tap generate code. And then it will ask you for a PIN or your fingerprint to generate the code. And once you have the code, you enter it. You enter it onto the screen to have access to your bank account. Now, what's important here is that once you are sure, once you have success using the authenticator app with the code, that you delete your cell phone number from the settings in your bank account. So there's a screen, one of my slides at the end has a bunch of screenshots, And from TD, you just go to user profile and settings. And then from there, you look for your login options. And then you'll come across your phone numbers. And in my case, I had two phone numbers. I had my cell phone and my landline. I kept my landline and I deleted my cell phone. So this, you want to make sure you do this because if a SIM thief swaps your SIM card and they have the information to log into your bank account either from malware, from phishing, from scraping the internet, from, data breaches from stores like Winners, I think, had Marshalls or Winners had Home Depot. They sometimes have data breaches, and then the thieves on the dark web, they gather all this information, and they might have enough information on you to log into your bank account, especially if you're reusing passwords. So that's another thing too. You want to make sure you're using individual passwords for all your different accounts. And so you want to make sure you delete that phone number from the TD login option because you don't want a thief to have that option because he's got your SIM card. He's got your SIM card info. He's got your SIM card. He swapped your SIM card and he'll get your SMS codes if you leave your cell phone number there. So he will get all your codes to enter into your bank account. So you want to delete that so that even if they have your SIM card, they're not going to get the two-factor authentication. They're not going to get that because you have the TD Authenticator app on your phone. So go ahead and delete that phone number. And I think the next slide is also just more instructions. Alan? Yeah, then it tells you, I just tell you how to go back and make sure that everything is hunky-dory, that you've deleted your phone number. And also, in case you lose your phone, your cell phone, either stolen or lost or you've misplaced it, you won't have access to your bank account because the TD Authenticator app has been linked to your bank account from your cell phone. So you want to either add another number and you want to make sure it's a landline number, not another cell phone. And I guess a lot of people don't have landline numbers anymore. So you want to install the TD Authenticator app on another device. You want to install it on a partner's device or on a tablet. And that way, now a partner has to be somebody you trust. I would personally just set it up on another tablet that I have. And that way, if you lose your phone, you can still access your bank account. And if you just look at the next slide, Alan, these are all the screenshots, I think. So that just brings you through the TD Bank if you're with TD. And then on the last page just has Wikipedia links to for term definitions for two-factor authentication and SIM swap scams. So if you want more detail, and I do believe all the banks offer multi-factor authentication, and not just text, not just by text. I believe probably the big banks offer an authenticator app. And that way you have a safe way to access your bank account. So that's it.
Okay, thank you very much, Bridget.
We do have some comments in the chat. A lot of it, if you can hang on till next week, we had another question come into the suggestion box email address about this SIM swap problem. And I knew it was going to end up happening. I went down a rabbit hole at quite a few slides, too many to cover this week. And so next week I will have a presentation talking about SIM swaps and preventing it and things like that. I would recommend anybody who has questions about that, wait until next week. Don't freak out about SIM swaps at this point in time, even if you're using texts as the means of getting the codes. I'll have lots more information next week.
Okay, one question there was a confusion between whether it's the bank or the phone company that has to contact you before your phone number gets changed. And that the problem is the SIM swap thing, the bad guy changes the phone number that's associated with the SIM card. So you have to have the phone company basically stop them doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you lock your SIM card on your phone, I do believe I tried calling calling my Kudu and asking them to lock, and they had to move it up because they didn't know what you know it was something that whoever was on the phone couldn't handle. And but I just found today that you can lock your SIM card. You can lock it on your phone directly, like locally on your phone with a PIN. So that's one way to do it for sure.
Okay, thanks, Bridget. Okay, so sticking with security issues, Karen brought up this link from the City of Ottawa, and apparently there's a QR code scam on various pay-by-phone parking meter issues, where you park your car and you pay by cell phone using a link. And what they've done is they've taken the actual original legitimate pay-by-phone information here, and they've stuck on a QR code which actually takes you to a nefarious website. So you've got to be careful with that. Ottawa doesn't use QR codes to allow you pay for parking, so don't fall for that one. And another one that I saw an article about, I haven't seen this in Ottawa and I haven't seen this in Canada, but the issue was people mailing things to you by postal mail. And this occurred in Germany, and the individuals were getting letters from supposedly from their bank. It looked very official. Some of them had official logos, which isn't hard, but some of them had personal information, which they'd obviously obtained from other sources. And, you know, the usual, this is related to an important matter relating to your account, and scan this QR code and we'll help you by taking all your money, probably. Same kind of thing, the QR code doesn't go to the real bank website and it wants your login credentials so they can access your real bank account. So if that one comes across the pond, then beware of that one too, I guess. Chris now has a thing on Google and Chrome extensions.
Yeah, I came across a notice about this just recently. Google is going to break some of probably the Chrome extensions that you have installed in Chrome. And this happened a while ago. They actually came out with Manifest V3, and the notice is that Manifest V2 is being phased out by early 2025. Some corporations on that will have ways of being able to continue using Manifest V2, but by and large, the great unwashed masses will be moved to Manifest V3 only, and that is going to break some extensions. Next. So, Manifest, what WTF is all about that about? So Manifest is actually a configuration file that is used by the extensions that are loaded into your browser. And it defines a whole bunch of stuff, and a couple of the main things that it defines is permissions that the extension requires to operate correctly, such as accessing certain web pages, browser features, and so forth, and also the ability to inject into web pages to modify what content you actually see on the page or the behavior of the pages. And you can imagine this with, you know, things like blockers for ads. They have to be able to modify the way the page looks to remove the ad. So Manifest V3 has stricter limits on the permissions, and, you know, it is all about security and privacy. Next. So is it good or bad? So Google says that the changes are to reduce the potential that you'll get some kind of malicious extension and it'll have some ability to exploit the user data that you actually see on the screen. They say it's to improve overall browser security. And in things like this, it's always a trade-off between security and privacy and the functionality that you actually get. So that's always the case with increased security, is it's going to decrease functionality or flexibility. Next. So there's mixed reactions about this in the developer community and the user base. And especially impacted in this is going to be ad blockers and security extensions, which have to be able to modify the web pages that you actually look at. Next. Something to keep in mind, Google is an advertising company. So 77.4% of Google revenues came from ads in 2023. Next. So did this limiting of ad blockers or influencing the way that they can modify web pages and breaking, by and large, ad blockers and security things, did that, you know, move to that? Was it actually part of Google's ad revenues that were going to be impacted by ad blockers? That's just my contribution to conspiracy theory, just if anybody cares. Next. Okay, so will you be affected? So this is a shot of Google Chrome, and you click on the icon for extensions, or you go into the menus and get to extensions. Next. And down at the bottom of the extensions that you have loaded into the browser, you'll have an option to manage extensions. Some other browsers that are based on Chromium, you don't get at it this way. There'll be somewhere in the extensions tab that you can get to where there will be a manage extensions. So you click on that. Next. And then you'll get a list of the extensions right at the top in Chrome that are going to be affected. And it says, and I've highlighted in yellow, these extensions may soon no longer be supported. And those are the ones that are using Manifest V2. And so when Google decides that in Chrome they're going to enforce the use of Manifest V3, those extensions will probably stop functioning. Next. Oh, actually, before you go on to the next, go back one. One of the things I found actually kind of interesting was Google Dictionary by Google is one of the ones on there that is going to be affected. But you'll notice Malwarebytes, BrowserGuard, uBlock Origin, so security extensions and ad blocking extensions. Next. So what can you do about it? So first off, you can switch to an alternative plugin or extension that will give you that same functionality, but it uses Manifest V3. Good luck with that, both finding out does this alternative actually provide its functionality through Manifest V3, or are you going to have to install it to find out that, and are you going to be able to find one that has the same functionality? Anyhow, that's one alternative, and that's certainly what Google Chrome recommends, that you actually look for an alternative extension. You could check with the developer of the extension to see if they're going to have a new version that uses Manifest V3. And I think most of them actually will, because they now know that, you know, within, you know, 4 or 5 months, all of a sudden their extension is going to stop functioning. So they're probably going to move quite quickly to Manifest V3. You could give up the extension if you no longer need it, or you could change browser, and perhaps you'll use a browser that is not going to enforce the use of Manifest V3. Next. Don't rush. You should be fine until 2025. So I would monitor that extension list and see towards the end of the calendar year, are there still ones on there that you're going to have to deal with? But maybe you don't have to. Next. This I found yesterday. When I loaded up Google Chrome, it actually came up with Malwarebytes browser control saying that they had moved to Manifest V3. And so right now we see evidence that the browser extension companies out there are actually moving to Manifest V3. So in all likelihood, this is going to be a non-issue. But again, you might want to look at it towards the end of the year and see whether there's an actual problem with it or not. And that's, what about other Chromium-based browsers? So there are a lot of other ones like Edge, Brave, Vivaldi, and so forth that use the Chromium engine. Will they be affected by that change? I'm guessing probably yes. Now, if I go into those browsers and I look at the extensions, I see no indication that the same extensions I'm using in the other browsers are soon no longer going to be supported. So I guess they will have the ability to continue using Manifest V2, but I suspect that they will probably actually move to Manifest V3 around the same time frame anyways. That's a guess on my part. Firefox is one of the few browsers out there now that doesn't use the Chromium engine, and I think it's less likely to be affected, but that's just a guess on my part as well. And that's it for all about Manifest V3 and how it's going to affect browser extensions.
Safari is advertising that they're safer because they're Apple. And it is true that you can't, I believe the extensions on Safari are limited. I believe that Safari used to be able to get to root on Windows. I'm not sure about its current status.
Yeah, Apple used to say all the time that Windows was terrible for security and viruses and things like that, and they shut up about that pretty much as more and more things started to appear as problematic on the Apple platforms. But as a general rule, I think it is true that the Apple side of things is probably more secure, but it's not not an, you know, an absolute.
Okay, thanks, Chris. So next up, Carol Pearson has a share for us on which I think are electronic jigsaw puzzles. And Carol, you're going to share your screen.
Isn't that Bob's?
No.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
You need to unmute yourself too, Carol.
Okay, so
you haven't shared your screen yet, Carol.
It's not showing?
Nope.
Mm. Yeah, it is. I thought she
was. Yeah. Oh, actually, yeah, you're just showing a Q&A slide?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, there you go.
I was like, oh. Well, so the first thing I learned from this is that I sent this in as a Looney Bit. Well, I didn't know that Looney Bit meant Canadian companies. So anyway, so now it is a share. I have learned that. And I am going to post this with a disclaimer that this website is highly addictive and time consuming and even time wasting. So be forewarned. So the website is Jigsaw Planet. And this is the homepage when you go to Jigsaw Planet. It's helpful to create an account, so if you start a puzzle, you can stop it in the middle and it saves it for you. And I was surprised to find that I actually have someone following me. I didn't know that. And these are just a few, on this homepage are just a few of the choices that you can choose from. You'll see, you can scroll over with the view more, or you'll see here, or you can do the drop down and explore the explore button and find multiple topics. So I usually go to popular searches. You see the explore button along the bar, and then you'll see this. So you can choose from all of these topics. I usually pick Disney or patchwork or desserts. And this is the first time that I saw the word nude there. I was shocked. Anyway, I checked it out. There's nothing really nude. It's bathing suits and that. But I was like, oh, my God, nude. So you choose your puzzle here or a puzzle. Okay, and this is where I chose desserts. And you can see this is the selection. And then you just choose a puzzle. And you can scroll through a whole bunch of pictures of what you want to do. And then you can choose options for your puzzle. You can choose how many pieces you want it to be. It can be 4 to 100 or up to 300, I think, is the maximum number of pieces. You can choose whether you want the pieces to rotate, which would be as if the pieces fell on your table. So they wouldn't be lined up perfectly. They'll fall in random order, which makes the puzzle, of course, more difficult. And I usually don't do that. It's too hard. And then you can choose the type of this is the puzzle I chose. Then you go to play as, and you can choose what style of piece that you want. So I usually go to custom. but you can do anything you want. And so here's the custom kind of pieces. You can have a jaggedy one. I usually do the second one in, but you can choose any kind you want. And this is how the puzzle looks when you start. So this is probably 180 pieces, which is what I usually choose, not random. And you can make the puzzle for the full screen of your computer down in the right-hand corner. You can see where you can enlarge it to take up your total screen. The three-dot menu in the lower right-hand corner allows you some different settings. The one allows you to change the background color to any of those colors. I don't usually restart them. There's a little ghost guy there. This is new. I never noticed it until I was doing this presentation. So the ghost allows you to bring up your full picture. So you can actually do the puzzle on top of it, but you can't move the ghost around on the screen. So to me, it gets in the way. And sometimes it kind of obscures your view of the actual puzzle. But it does help to, if you want to see where to place your pieces. This is how I usually do it. That also on the bottom left-hand corner there, you can pull up the size of the picture that you actually are doing. And then you can do the puzzle on one side and the pieces on the other. So you can also do unlimited topics and searches. So even though Ottawa was not in that original list, you can search in the puzzle search box. And there I search for Ottawa. And you can see the pictures of Ottawa. And you can do puzzles for Ottawa. Or you can create a puzzle. Now, I had never done this, but just for this, I went in there and I did make a puzzle. And you can pick any picture. You can make the picture, you can keep it private, you can make it public, or you can send a link of a puzzle to someone else of any picture that you want to upload. And this is the puzzle I created. And that's the end.
We had a comment from Tom. I love the one puzzle that has four pieces, especially four pieces with square edges. Yeah.
Okay, so moving along, we do have a Loony Link. And this is from Tom, and it's a channel called, or a website called Coding with Lewis. And he says he likes coding, and he's self-taught, and he saved himself $17.63 by using a Python program. And so if you're interested in programming, here's some examples of the some of the topics that he's covered. I believe the top one there is my bank wanted $17, so I used a Python instead, which was a way of extracting a whole bunch of historical records of transactions on his bank account. But clearly there are other things there too, APIs and live streaming, using AI chat. And so on and so forth. So there's all kinds of things there if you're interested in programming, all kinds of things to check out. And the next thing we have is a member who wants to know if YouTube is forcing her to sign in. And she's always used YouTube without having to sign in, but recently she's been getting this sign in to confirm you're not a bot message on both her PC and on an iPhone. And rebooting the devices or using incognito mode didn't make any difference. However, she did turn a VPN off and then was able to watch with no problems. And one of the things that happened was she got this message which says our systems have detected unusual traffic and has given an IP address and the time and so forth. And here now she's concerned that somebody's hacked into her network, even though she's the only one using it. And my suggestion is that YouTube is looking at some kind of suspicious activity, but it may be caused by bots, which is one of the things that they said they were looking for. They wanted to make sure it wasn't one, or users that are trying to do things that they shouldn't be doing, generating this so-called unusual traffic. And I've seen this on one of my ISPs, and had the IP address blocked or the domain blocked, but it doesn't mean it's you that's doing it. They may be blocking a whole domain because of a few, you know, a bad actor or two. And in particular, I looked up the IP address that was given, that 99.79 address, and it turns out to be an Amazon.com address. And the fact that the user had disabled a VPN and then everything worked like magic suggests to me that that's exactly what's happening, that YouTube is blocking some IP address, or IP domain, and when you enable or disable a VPN, then it puts you onto a different IP address. So if one works and the other one doesn't, then suggests to me that YouTube is blocking one of the domains. But as I say, it may not be your issue, it may be somebody else on that same domain because you're using shared services, essentially. Okay, next up we have a thing from our AI guru, Bob Harris, and I think, Bob, you're just going to talk to your slides.
Unmuted. Thank you. Thank you, Alan. If people have room for it, thank you. Good evening. What's new in AI? Next slide, please. Is anyone here looking for a really good dentist? And well, please open wide for your new AI-powered robot dentist. And next, I'm not sure if you saw this in the news last week. I came across this story more than once. It was in Tech Radar and Newsweek, Technopedia, and stuff. And so if you didn't see it, I'd like you to be aware of this. And next, please. A new high-tech company from dental company from Boston is building AI-powered robots for dental work. Next, please. I'm sure you've all heard of Mark Zuckerberg. He's the creator of Facebook. Well, Mark's father, Edward, is a very successful dentist. He's involved with a company called Perceptive, and they've just completed the world's first all-robotic AI dental procedure. This was done in Colombia, actually. It's not approved just yet in the United States to use. It was very successful, though. And next, please. This is an actual screenshot taken during the process in which the AI robot was doing a process called drilling and shaving into a tooth. And next here, please. Now, this AI robot can do crown replacements in as little as 15 minutes. And this same procedure would take a dentist about 2 hours. So this allows your dentist to diagnose and care for you with a much higher standard in much less time. Now, this new AI technology, next please, this newest technology is not yet widely available, but it will be coming soon and is already a waiting list. And next, if you would like to jump to the front of the AI dental waiting list, just shoot me an email. I can get you a dental appointment next week with your new dentist. Coming soon. Thank you.
And Chris wants to know what could possibly go wrong with that, but
okay. Very good. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Bob. Interesting that Mark Zuckerberg's father is involved in that.
Yes.
Who would have thunk? Okay, so that's actually all the prepared material we have this week. So we're into the last 10, basically 5 minutes early. So if people have questions or other items of interest to chat about, now's your opportunity. You can put it in the chat or you can open your mic.
Does anybody play bridge here? I could do a presentation next week on BridgeBase Online, which I used and have used a lot.
That could be cool.
I'm interested in learning. If it's a learning thing.
Yes, it does support learning. Chris, you've used it?
No, I haven't, no.
Okay, I'll put together a small presentation for next week, Sam.
I have no idea how to play bridge. I'd be interested also. Thank you, Tom.
Alden says, as long as it's not that robot dentist, as long as it's not designed and built by Boeing.
Well, while we're waiting for any other questions to come in or comments, you might want to jump to the next slide, Alan.
Well, the question here is if anybody is a Pixel user using the newest AI, which is called Gemini. So while you're thinking about that, yeah, we can go to the next slide. And Linda will talk about it.
Oh, okay. Thanks very much, Alan. So I just wanted people to know that I'm doing a Zoom lecture outside of OPCUG normal hours. But I'm going to be using an OPCUG account. I'd like to invite everybody to come along with some of my friends, colleagues, the fellow photographers, etc. So this lecture is going to be on close-up or macro photography. I'm going to talk about both because while you can take close-up photos with all sorts of types of cameras, macro photography tends to be referring to when you have a dedicated macro lens, and I'll be talking a lot about that too. So if you haven't weighed in that area, you might be interested. So it's going to take place Monday, August 6th in the evening, 7 to 8. Probably it would be about a 40 minute lecture, and then we'll have lots of time to talk and for questions. So that's the link there, and I hope to see you all.
Something of note regarding that is that apparently the new Pixel 9 has a macro mode.
That Pixel 9, I want that so bad. There's a lot of things on that phone I want. money. So
they're higher priced now. They're higher priced now. They cost more than they did last year.
They're very pricey.
They have a fancy, much more memory, 16 gigs of memory, and, much more AI support, Gemini AI support.
Like over 40 megapixels each photo, and they've got amazing things to do with photos for sure. But I have to come up with the almost $3,000, I think, with tax.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
No. The Pixel Pro is only $1,400, but you can but there's trade-ins. The Pixel. The Pixel Pro non-XL is $1,100, and the Pixel by itself, Pixel 9, is, I think, $900 or something like that, or $1,099, something like that.
When I was looking at it, was $2,600.
That's the full, because you actually get three images then. There's an 8-inch inside where you unfold it, and there's a regular phone on the outside, too.
Okay.
So it's not $3,000 for two, it's cheaper than that. Plus they do give, if you look at, you probably got, or Chris at least got an email like I did, promoting the Pixel 9, and it has a whole bunch of stuff as to how you can save money, while buying it, mainly by trade-ins. And if you buy the Pro XL, they will give you $275 in store credit. So you can buy a pair of earbuds too or something.
So Carol had a question. That's the Zoom link. What are you looking for, Carol?
So if I because it's not till August 26th, how do I get that? Where else can I get that link? Or do I have to
save that link? I think Alan's willing to announce it again next week at tonight's meeting, so next Wednesday. But yeah, if you could just
copy that link
into your, notebook or and just save it, because I won't be sending out an email to OPCUG people. So you'll just have to kind of show up.
It is in the chat, so you can copy it from there. It will also be in the posting for the chat that goes up on the website later on this evening.
And this slide will be in the deck too, so.
Yeah. We also had a couple of questions, I guess. Elizabeth said the OPL hasn't provided a list of all the upcoming OPCUG presentations. That list just got finalized today, so we have 30 upcoming presentations for the fall. So the ones at Carlingwood are already on the website. The rest of them will probably be going up for registration within a couple of weeks or thereabouts. So just check again with the OPL website. You can always just show up for them. Anyways, I do recommend registration only in that if you don't register and like there's nobody shows up and it gets canceled, you wouldn't get notified. But other than that, we don't take attendance at the presentations. There was something else.
One of the reasons I'm giving this lecture is I was asked to do macro photography for another group, and then we offered it to the library, and only one library picked it up. So I thought if people are interested in it, they might not be close to that one library that picked it up. So that's why.
We had a question from Eldon. Has anyone switched to and had any experience with FIZZ, F-I-Z-Z, as a phone supplier? Basic plan is $23 a month. So if there's anybody who has experience with that, you could unmute yourself or throw something into the chat.
And for Tom, there's quite a bit of interest, Tom, in your bridge presentation.
Yep.
Including Rosemary, who says she plays euchre, which she understands is a simple version of bridge. And I think it's actually the opposite. They're not really all that related, but I think bridge is a simple version of euchre, because the bridge, jack of clubs is a jack of clubs.
Well, I don't know about that, but...
Well, they use euchre. They play euchre in the Bowery. Bridge, you use 13 cards. Euchre, I think it's 5. So, and bidding is a little more complicated. And there have been people have developed a whole ton of conventions to convey information and to ask for information. I won't be covering all of those. I'm just going to show you how you can play it and some resources to learn how to be able to play it well with partners. But you can play it on this website with robots who follow a fairly simple and common in North America bidding scheme called 2-1. And I like it a lot. A lot of people like it a lot, but I run four tournaments a day for free. So it's something that a lot of people like to enjoy. And I'll cover that in the next meeting.
Robots, Carol wanted to know about the robot dentist, whether there's anything about anesthesia. I'm pretty sure I saw an arm with a big wooden mallet on that gizmo.
Eldon, Stu had a comment about the FIZZ. He said that in the chat, I advised my partner to switch to FIZZ a year ago, and she's been happy since. So there's at least one happy customer of his. It certainly sounds like a steal of a deal for the price.
Thank you, Chris. Yes, I saw Stu's message and I replied to him thanking her too. So It's just a new thing that's come out. You can get a FIZZ card at several places around here. You can get them online or you can get them at any the Esso stations that have that little grocery store. I can't remember. Okay, or KO or something like that. And the SIM card's $5 and $23 a month for a basic one. So I'm just thinking about it. I'm actually thinking of using it as a direct to phone, so I can direct calls to that particular phone instead of using my regular phone.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Okay. Darlene is asking if locking the SIM is a recommended thing to do.
I'm sorry, Alan, I couldn't make out what you said.
Sorry, this was about SIM cards again, and Darlene was asking if locking the SIM card is recommended.
Oh, sorry.
Does anybody have any thoughts on that?
Well, it prevents somebody from pulling the physical SIM out of your phone and using it elsewhere, I believe. It doesn't prevent SIM swaps. I don't think it should.
No, I think there's two kinds of locking for SIM cards. If you lock your own SIM card in your phone, I think that means that if you want to access it, you have to put in a PIN or something. I'm really not familiar with that one. The other one is locking your SIM with your provider of phone services. And for that, you have to contact them.
Yeah.
Because SIMs are often, I mean, people buy new phones, they transfer over. So SIM swapping is very normal.
Yeah.
What's not nice about it is when someone else swaps SIMs and you're not even there or giving consent.
Yeah. The whole SIM swap thing, as I say, I'll have much more to talk about the whole topic next week. I don't think that people should freak out about it. By and large, if you use good password habits, you don't really have to worry about SIM swaps, because the important thing to note is that when you try to log in to somewhere with two-factor authentication, you first have to provide a username and a password. And so if you're using good passwords, people should not be able to get past that. Now, it's not to say that two-factor authentication is bad. It's just that it shouldn't be required. And the extra steps that somebody has to go through to do a SIM swap, they have to know who your provider is. So they have to get your password first so that they can put in your username and your password. Then they have to know who your phone provider is, go to that phone provider and trick them into saying, oh, I lost, I am Bridget Lord, and I lost my phone. And so I therefore want, I got a new SIM card, and I please transfer my number over to that. And so there's, extra hoops that people have to go through. So SIM swapping, I don't think, is as common or as dangerous a thing as some people will make it out to be. But more to come on that. And I don't think that I see anything else question-wise in the chat. So if you did put something in that we neglected to get to, please jump in. And we do have a couple of minutes left. Otherwise, I guess we can ask Alan to take us through the wrap-up slide.
Okay, so just finally, this presentation by Linda on macro photography on August 26th. We'll remind you about that next week again. And talking about next week, well, there's the ant.
Yes. I guess it was animated.
I'm getting this direct message from Linda saying, well, are you afraid of ants? I had this picture on my slide. Well, the trouble is, Linda, you put it in as a bill.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. Not sure how. It probably was because I probably copied it from another presentation where it was a bill. My fault.
That'll do it.
That'll do it.
It didn't show up until I tried to squeeze the slide.
You try to move away.
Right. So how to take a picture of ants. There you go. Ants and MTs, I guess.
Come to my lecture so you can take pictures of ants.
All right. So next week is August the 21st. We'll have another Q&A. And we've got a couple of topics already. Chris has got his SIM card swap stuff available for next week for sure. And we have a promise from Tom on the bridge app. But if you have questions, like some of the questions we've had tonight, or things that you'd like to share, like some of the things we've had tonight, send us a little note to suggestion box and we'll be happy to add them to the agenda. So thanks to everyone who provided information tonight. Hope everybody enjoyed the wide variety of material, and we'll see you on the 21st.
Thanks, folks. See you next week.